need a Ziggy lock for the Monday night or tonight, Zig. We forgot last week.
Bucks and Rams.
It's in Tampa Bay.
Home of the Raptors.
What's the updated line?
Tampa Bay favored by 4.5.
Yeah, I'm going with the Bucks. That's your law.
Bam, bam, bam.
All right, so you got...
And can we update? I'm 12-10 overall.
Whoa. You were 10-10-9.
And
1. No, you went 10-10-1 on Friday, and you went 2-1 yesterday. At best, you're 12-11.
I think it's 12-10, but if you want to go 12-11 because you messed one up, that's fine. Score game. All right? One score game. Don't make it look like the Bucks did not have a chance last night. Jared Goff was good, but I'm telling you, Brady's not done. The Bucks are good. It just didn't work out. They get in for a touchdown. They win. I cover. Everybody goes to bed happy. Instead, I didn't sleep last night.
Hold on a second. You're saying the Buccaneers would have covered if they'd scored a touchdown late. They were down 3.
Yes.
They would have scored to go up 4, presuming that they kicked the extra point, and the line was 4.5. So
was
even
it 4.5? Even I thought it was 3.5.
Even
all
your
night.
Even your scrambled even your scrambled excuses don't cover your ass now.
That it wasn't 3.5. It was 4.5.
You honestly, you need to buy a violin, because every time we start a show by talking about another failed Ziggy lock, you have this wonderful explanation for how it all went wrong and how it shouldn't have gone wrong.
Leadoff is not responsible for any money lost on a Ziggy lock.
Yeah, but they would have kicked the extra point and I would have won. No, they would have won
by
4.
Third,
they would have, yeah.
Right.
4.
And the line was 4.5.
That's not good.
Yeah. I mean, if they'd gone for 2.
No, if they'd gone for 2, that's what I mean.
Nobody's going for 2, though. You're kicking for the extra point. You're kicking for the extra point so that the Rams can't go back down the field and kick a game-tying field goal.
You don't
right?
know that. It's a one-score game. It didn't work out. I'm 500. And you know what? I'm going to be more selective with my picks. I've been kind of muscled into picking certain games
no,
in
you
certain
haven't.
Days.
No.
I'm going to go now, and I'm picking my games this week.
You've committed to picking the Thursday game. Now we've got 3 Thursday games for U.S. Thanksgiving. So do you take one or do you take all 3? You've decided. I didn't say this to you. You decided I'm taking a 1, a 4, and a Sunday nighter on Sundays, and I'm taking the Monday nighter. So you've muscled yourself into that corner.
It makes it interesting picking one at each different time and the Monday and Thursday nighter. So going forward, I got to be sharp. Well, we're 500. It's not... You know, you don't have to take my advice every game, but if you take it for half of it, you're right. Doing pretty good.
Yeah. Now, and I mean, I do think it's important that we point out that you somehow went from a record of like 2-1 to a record of 10-4. So there,
no, I'm 12. I'm 12-12.
Well, you are now, but there were some phantom wins in there. You went from like having picked 3 games to having picked 16 or something. It was
Silent Vic's got to go through and dig. He's got to dig them all up. He's got to go through all the weeks and dig them up.
You know, Silent Vic isn't working this morning, eh?
Is he's
Josh,
gone?
Josh is working the board and Silent Vic, because Josh is working Thursday, Friday, right? Because Silent Vic is taking a long weekend because he wants to watch all the NFL games on Thursday and doesn't want to have to wake up Friday. So he's taking Thursday, Friday off. So now he's the 4 person. He's the guy
Josh
on the construction project who's standing there directing traffic now.
No, he's the guy with the coffee. He's got his mug out and he's directing traffic for sure. Right now he's not doing a thing,
but
he's sitting there.
think of the plan he put in place though. He's like, you know what? I'm going to take 2 days off late November. I'm going to watch the triple header in the NFL on the Thursday and sleep in on the Friday and turn it into a 4-day weekend. He's having his own American Thanksgiving, and he's finagled that into effectively a 6-day weekend because he's just sitting back this morning and tomorrow morning just to make sure that Josh is comfortable
everything.
And okay. Oh, yeah. I'm here
for
you, Josh.
Yeah, I'm sure Josh could handle everything just fine, but Silent Vic wants an extra day off. I can see him right now, hat down, in the back, recliner back, just completely relaxing right now. Watched the game last night, didn't get his same sleep, probably stayed out a little bit later after the game. Oh, yeah. I know Silent Vic.
Oh.
And two Thanksgivings, that's right. Is it fine to celebrate two things? Can you celebrate the Canadian and the American? You know people that actually cook turkey, both of them?
Well, I don't know. Like, I mean, it's not like we can sit here and take days off of work unless you use vacation days. You can't go to your employer and say, hey, you know what? I would like to observe the American Thanksgiving. Can I just take 2 days as stats? But I know people who are American and who live up here and observe the holiday. Absolutely. And yes, you can. I mean, if you take the day off work, why wouldn't you? Throw a turkey in the oven, or as you would, a tofurkey.
A tofurkey.
And
yes.
Sit down and watch. Now, here's the thing, though, with the NFL. It's tradition in the NFL for the Detroit Lions to host the early Thursday game, and then the Dallas Cowboys always hosted the later game at 4 o'clock. They've added, of course, the Thursday nighter as part of the package, and if your Ravens flock can get its COVID situation in order, that game will be big
on Thursday night.
What is
happening there? We lost our running backs.
Yes, we have.
We have
lost our running backs. Poor us.
Yeah. I mean, I'm honestly, the Ravens team right now, Baltimore is right there with the 49ers. For injuries and COVID losses, all of that. We're right there with you. We've lost the same amount of man games as you have.
Well,
have we not?
Well, it's way up there. And if you look, I mean, Baltimore is 6-4, right? And
feeling we're not in good shape right now.
Feeling like they're in a bit of a free fall. Like, look at the AFC North. Pittsburgh's 10-0. We know that. That's being celebrated because they're undefeated. Cleveland's in second place. Now,
I know it's not good right now.
The Ravens and Browns will play another game against each other, so that'll go a long way to determining who finishes second in the division. But the Browns, and the Browns aren't beating anybody convincingly. It's a 3-point win here, or it's a 5-point win.
Yeah, they're ugly wins.
But it doesn't matter. Like, as I say, my dad's a diehard Browns fan, has been for 6 decades now. I would say it doesn't matter what it looks like. The point is win. And then if you get into the playoffs, you're going to have to put a better game together.
The Ravens are the biggest disappointment in the NFL this year. There's nobody bigger. You can say the 49ers, but the injuries are so bad. I think the Ravens are the biggest disappointment if you look at the whole league.
Well, relative to expectation. And Ziggy, if they were 8-2, if they were 8-2 and in second place because the Steelers are 10-0, you'd be okay with that.
I'm okay. The Steelers, they're playing well. Tomlin's got them going. Roethlisberger's got, you know, since his injury a couple years ago, he's been looking great. They found new weapons. Claypool has been incredible. First wide receiver with 10 TDs, first 10 games. Remember when Tomlin was like, the guy that they wanted to replace, he's been there too long. He's there for life. He ain't going anywhere now.
Well, no,
you
but
can't
I mean,
get
the,
rid of him.
The Pittsburgh Steelers don't fire coaches. Don't fire coaches. They've had three head coaches since 1969.
Is that crazy?
Well, it's absurd. I mean, some teams go through three head coaches in 3 years.
Yeah.
Like the 49ers, you know me, I always come back to them, and I apologize in advance.
Keep coming back to them.
Jim Harbaugh was the head coach in 2014, Jim Tomsula 2015, Chip Kelly 2016, Kyle Shanahan 2017, and Shanahan's still there. But so they had four head coaches in 4 seasons. And the Pittsburgh Steelers have had three since 1969. Chuck Knoll retired, was replaced by Bill Cowher, who retired, was replaced by Mike Tomlin. It's got to be 13 or 14 years ago, and Tomlin is still there and doing a great job.
I feel like Shanahan could stay a while in
absolutely
San Fran.
He could, but
I think he could be like a 15, 20, like a long time coach there.
Right, and they just gave him a they tore up his first 6-year contract 3 years into it and gave him a new sixer. So they want him there. But Mike Tomlin, if you think of the personalities that he has worked with, Ben Roethlisberger is a complicated human being. Antonio Brown, he kept Antonio Brown focused, relatively speaking, for a long time. The Browns' best years were in Pittsburgh. Le'Veon Bell and the drama about whether he was going to show up or not show up. Just a lot of guys have rolled through Pittsburgh and given the Steelers their best years, and they have not been able to piece it together elsewhere.
I never was that a couple of events with him?
What? Who?
He didn't come. Tomlin. Like, because I played in Pittsburgh.
Right. He goes back.
He's one of the guys. He's one of the guys I would have, you know, I've always wanted to meet, you know, especially now coaching. He's just a guy that I know he's a player's coach. He just seems like that guy with the door open policy all the time.
Well, you should invite him. Talk. You should invite him for a round at Oakmont.
Yeah.
Next summer.
I don't know if he golfs or not. I'd seen Roethlisberger used to show up to some of our events. He would just roll in. Like, we'd have a sectioned off place at the back of a restaurant after a game, and Roethlisberger would just wheel in like he was part of the team. I always remember him coming in, and we'd be like, oh, Ben's here. Like, it was awkward. Yeah. So, and that was the year they won too, right? They won the Super Bowl 2009, right? That same, it was the same.
Yeah.
Wasn't the same year. It wasn't 08.
No, I think it was the.
It was into 09.
Right. So it was the 08 season, but it was early 2009. Yes. That they won the Super Bowl.
And he used to, because I was like, I'm pretty sure he used to wear his Super Bowl ring in, and then that got us all, because none of the guys, nobody wears their Stanley Cup rings. Like, that's a
big
no-no.
But that's a big Ben thing.
You don't wear your ring out, and you don't wear it to another professional team's party.
That does not
sound. It was our party. It wasn't an event. If it was an event, yes, do it. It's great for the fans. You take pictures with it. I get it. But Roethlisberger would wear it to our parties that were private. I'm sorry, you don't do that.
Okay, but does anything of what you said surprise anybody? No
the
chance.
Roethlisberger. Oh,
that is the biggest Big Ben thing ever. I'm sitting back. You're telling that story, and I'm like, I can totally envision this. Guy's got a big rock on his finger. Hey, look at me. It's glistening off the lights. Hey, look, this is my Super Bowl ring. Want to see it? Oh, I've got another one, by the way.
Yeah. I'm trying to think who else. I'd see Ferrier out a lot.
James Ferrier was a great player.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what position he was, though. I know he was defensive player.
He was a linebacker, wasn't he?
Was he a linebacker?
Was Troy Polamalu kicking around at that point? You'd know him because of the hair, right?
The hair, massive hair.
He still does shampoo commercials.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I saw him with Mahomes doing them. Polamalu was actually really big in the community. I would do my own thing outside of the team, children's hospitals, try to get around the city. You try to do stuff outside. The team usually does something once a month or twice a month, but try to do a little bit more. And whenever I talk to whoever it was, a community organizer or a staff from the hospital, they would always say, you know, you come around and Polamalu always comes around. He's a guy that's always here, but you never read about it, right? How often do we read about some athletes? There's a lot of athletes. You have no idea what they do in the community.
You have no idea.
But they're out there a lot. And I know of some Leafs that do a lot of stuff in the community. They don't do any cameras. They don't talk about it. So there's a lot more stuff that athletes do. Polamalu was one of them in Pittsburgh. You know, that means a lot for the community.
Yeah, just as you were saying that, I remember I have a friend of mine up in Ottawa whose daughter had a very scary brain tumor at a year and a half, 2 years old that almost killed her. And very thankfully, she's come through it. But living in Ottawa, the Children's Hospital up there, it was such a specific and specialized case that the child had to come to SickKids and be taken care of and for months, right? Mm-hmm. And the family moved down and all of that. I mean, that's how serious things were. And I remember getting a text from him randomly one day, and he said, Jose Bautista, just walk through the my daughter's ward.
Wow,
and
that's
like,
cool.
But you, yeah, and this awesome was this was that. Like January. This was January or February.
Oh, so it's not even in season.
And I might be off by a year, but it could if it was it might have been 2018. So like it could have been that Bautista was no longer a Blue Jay, right? But he comes on up, and you guys do those things, and I think that is the side. You know, there's the annual day where the Leafs or the Raptors will go to Sick Kids, and the cameras will come in, and there's fun pictures and videos taken and all of that. But those things happen on a smaller and quieter basis constantly, not just in our city, but everywhere.
That's great. Yeah. No, it's good that athletes do stuff outside, because the team always does a number of events at hospital and, you know, in the cities that they're playing in. But for players, when they go above and beyond and they do their own thing as well, you know, it's something, you know, it's possible to do it at different times of the season. I get it when the schedule's tough and you're traveling around. It's not something you can do every single week. But when you're home, there's down times at parts of the season where you do. But most of the time, it's either you're doing an event with sponsors, with fans, you're on the road, you're playing, and you want a night off sometimes. Like some days you just want to practice in the morning, go home and do nothing. Like, literally just watch a movie. And there's not many of the season, NHL season anyway, so busy. But I feel like, you know, I mean, what do you do if you're a baseball player in season? I mean, you're playing every day. If you're going to do anything, you got to do it in the morning. You're 2 days off a month. I mean, you want to kind of relax and take those days off. So you got to do it before a game. I think baseball would be a tough one if you're in season, but yeah, all these guys doing extra stuff, you know, it's great to see for the communities.
Text us to 590-590, be a part of the program, and we always read your text here on Leadoff. I want to get back to Tom Brady.
Let's get into him.
So I think people are gun-shy now to have a conversation about the regression in Brady's play. And this doesn't date to a couple of weeks ago. And people covered for it last year. Oh, he didn't have deep options in New England, and Edelman wasn't healthy, and you know Gronkowski had retired for the year, and AB didn't work out. He didn't have a deep threat. Brady's struggles go back more than a year now, and I think people are gun-shy to suggest that it might be over because predictions of Brady's demise have been made almost annually for the last half decade or so. And he has always proven people wrong. And so now we're sitting back going, gee, I don't want to be the one to say Tom Brady is no longer one of the top quarterbacks in the NFL, because he's probably going to pull something out of his ass and Tampa Bay will make the playoffs and then go on a run, even if they have to win a bunch of road games. They'll go on a run, maybe make the NFC Championship or the Super Bowl, and Brady will prove me and prove us wrong, and then I'll get a bunch of texts to the text line saying, haha, remember when you said this. But Tom Brady last night, those two interceptions, Ziggy, those two interceptions were game changers. Obviously, the second one, you're down three just outside of the two-minute warning. That was a bad pass. The first one was the ugliest, but in terms of timing, the second one was the least forgivable. He is not the same player. He is not the same player, and you cannot count on him when he throws the ball deep down the field.
He struggled down the field. It's like one of his worst. They had his stats up. Him plus 15 yards is like, this is the worst season he's had in a long time. And I don't know if that's defenses, teams playing him well. I don't know if that's, he doesn't like his options. You see, he's getting more frustrated. I think, you know, like you say, Father Time has never been defeated. I feel like that's one of your patent.
You think that's my patent?
Well, you love to say it. You love to say it. You love to say it. Which is I love the saying. It's true. And I think this is the case. It's just, but the thing is, next week he can come back and play great. The thing with Brady is, a lot of times when a player gets older, you're like, okay, they just don't have it anymore. You know what you're gonna see with Brady? I don't think he'll ever not have it, it's just going to be inconsistent. That's Brady's so good and is going to go down as the all-time greatest quarterback. But when he goes down, as he goes down, if he doesn't go out on top, it's going to be a lot of this. It's going to be a lot of 1-2 games good, another game. Where did Tom Brady go? I don't think it's just going to be awful and Pizza City. It's just going to be inconsistency from week to week. That's going to be as bad as Brady gets. It's not going to be this fall from grace and no more. We're not going to see any more theatrics at the end. I mean, last night was a great example where, you know, they have 80 yards to march down the field and tie or win it, and they just couldn't do it. The thing I don't like when I'm watching Brady in these games is, I know you're going to laugh. Don't look at me. Just don't look at me. The thing I don't like
about
Brady.
We're on FaceTime, by the way, if you're listening and wondering, don't look at me, don't look at me. I can't imagine what this would be like if we were actually in studio together. Would I have to turn my back?
Yes.
So that you can spit out this sentence? Okay, go ahead.
Honestly, I don't like the body language from Brady when it's not going well. He looked at Leonard Fournette last night a couple times, and I know he didn't like, you know, he dropped a couple balls. He didn't like some of the routes he was taking, but I don't like how frustrated he looks when it's not going well. This isn't the Patriots and Belichick, and it's me and it's Belichick's and I team, and we do it our way, and this is not them. The Bucs are not the Patriots, and I don't like the body language. I don't like the looks Brady gives his teammates in nights like yesterday. I know you're going to laugh at that one. You're smiling at me. I'm
the point I was going to make, and an additional point I was going to make about last night's game is the Los Angeles Rams have a great pass rush, and Aaron Donald is at the top of that list, right? He's arguably the best player in football. And so what you've got Fournette in there helping to pass block every now and then. Mm. Brady's getting pressured. And so he's getting the ball out perhaps a half second quicker than he'd like to, and he's misfiring. So to your point about, well, he might be good one week and he'll struggle the next week, I think we've got to assess his performance now against the quality of the defenses that he's up against. If he's going up against some crappy divisional opponent like the Falcons, that's one thing. It's another thing when he's up against a great front like the LA Rams. And I know they've played the Saints twice, and in fact, the Saints helped to prove my point. New Orleans' defense is stout. They got a great defensive line. They'll blitz you off the corner. They make things complicated for you, and the Bucs got rolled twice by the Saints. Better defenses with good pass rushes are giving Brady serious headaches now, and this is not a guy who can get out of the pocket. Traditionally, that has been fine. But you just don't have the time to get the ball down the field, and he's rushing a couple of throws. Even if it looks like he's got time in the pocket, Ziggy, he might be a half step ahead of where he wants to be because he might be convinced that that pocket is closing on him. It's in his head.
The Rams did a great job. I mean, if your game plan has to include just get Brady moving. If you're going up against the Bucs, that has to be number one on your list of things you want to do. Get him moving. Let's apply a little pressure. The problem with it is that if you go with five or six against him and you rush him, Brady he'll find an open player and he'll really burn you. That's the hard part. So I liked the Rams last night. We're giving them different looks. Looked like they're going to come with five a couple times, then backed off. That was good. Sean McVay, I don't know. Does he just, I don't know if he lost some respect after the season they had last year, but I think he's one of the best in the league, one of the best coaches.
Well, and he gutted his entire, he fired Wade Phillips as his defensive coordinator. He's overhauled that defense.
Yeah, he changed it all. But didn't he say last year, he's like, this has to change. This won't work. And he went out and overhauled everything.
Well, the other thing, Ziggy, is they traded a ton of draft capital on the likes of Jalen Ramsey, the great cornerback, and they've signed him to an extension. The Rams have to be good now because they don't have the venues to replenish the system. So if they don't succeed in the next year or two or three, there could be a dearth of talent on that team as certain guys age out and the draft picks aren't there to backfill. If they don't have a good run here in the next couple of years, things will change for them.
Yeah, I just think they were, this is now his fourth year, right?
But they're also in a great division. Years.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. Yeah.
Like the 49ers last year came up. Seattle is perennially good, right? So you lose a divisional game or two, and that's the difference between being 8-4 after 12 or 13 weeks and 6-6 or 9-2 and 7-4. Like those one or two wins versus one or two losses can change everything.
It's by far the best division in the league. Nothing's even close to what's close to it. Nothing.
No, and you'd look at the records and say the AFC North with Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Baltimore.
It'd be a close the Browns, second, but
the Browns
you can't
are
put the Browns in
the Browns
that.
Are
no,
an iffy
not.
7-3. you know the Ravens are not looking good offensively. They're 6-4. You're right. I mean, there's the NFC East is certainly not the answer, to that question. We got a bit on the other side. We'll continue to talk a little football. The Raptors with another
what did we
signing.
Have?
Well, you're a diehard.
What did you say?
We got a bit coming up on the other side.
Oh, bit.
We're a diehard.
Like, what
the hell
that?
Do you think I said?
I don't know. Oh. I turn up my headphones.
All right, gotta get that Q-tip. Dig a little deeper. Get the earwax out of there. The Undertaker. You know who the Undertaker is?
I've heard of him before.
Okay,
yeah.
The Undertaker is a professional wrestler who retired on Sunday, marking the 30-year anniversary of the debut of his gimmick as The Undertaker in November of 1990. The Undertaker goes out on top. We're going to throw some athlete names out there, guys who went out at the top of their game, either with a championship or with great performance. Text us to 590-590. All morning we will read the athletes who went out on top. Very few get to do it, Ziggy. You could be nominated, though. We will take nominations for Mike Zigman. I don't know. Comes in at 590. We will.
I definitely will didn't go out on top. Rochester Americans.
Oh, and
finish the season.
and a bit of a brawl. The Phil Kessel, David Clarkson game, right from the Buffalo. From the Buffalo.
That was my last NHL shift. Yeah.
Hugh will jump in the studio. We'll go over some of those names and a lot more. Keep the text rolling into 590-590.
Lead off with Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I think Ziggy truly appreciates the theater of pro wrestling.
This is scary stuff.
This is the Undertaker's theme music. And he retired. I don't think he wrestled, but he retired on Sunday night at the WWE show known as Survivor Series, which is the same WWE, I guess it was then WWF show that he debuted at 30 years ago in November of 1990.
30 years. That's unbelievable.
30 years is the same wrestling character. Yeah. And
can I, I know you're like the wrestling expert. You're the savant. Can I quiz you on the Undertaker here?
Oh God.
You ready? I know this
can
is.
Can I go up against Ziggy?
Well, Ziggy's not a wrestling guy,
okay.
It would be a little unfair.
So this is not a quiz. This is a loser test.
Sure.
The number of answers I get correct determine how big a loser I am.
Do you know what his real name was?
Mark Calloway.
Mark William Calloway. Very, very good. Within...
Loser point number one.
Within 2 years, how old was he? How old is he, I should say? Within 2 years.
55.
Oh, bang on. Nailed it. He is 55.
Is he 55?
Yeah. His birthday's March 24th. Can you give me, I don't know, three other ring names that he went under in his career?
Well, he was definitely Mean Mark Callis.
Yep, that's one.
The other two, he might have gone by his real name, Mark Calloway, at some point.
Not according to Wikipedia, and they wouldn't lie.
Okay. That's the only one I know, Mean Mark Callis.
Texas Red? Okay. I guess that was back, way back in the day. The Master of Pain.
See, I don't remember any of those.
Dice Morgan. Which, if I was trying to get across the border illegally,
I might
go with Dice Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be a porn star name,
yeah,
too.
Exactly.
Like, I'm crossing the border to make some videos.
Within, I don't know, say 10 pounds, how heavy was?
Well, he was always listed at 328, but that doesn't, I'd say he's 295, like that.
You're good. Well, 309, you're right there. And how tall was he?
I think they listed him at 6'10".
6'10", yeah. 6'10". Well done.
Yeah.
Very, very well done.
So a big-time loser over here.
No, you nailed it for the most part.
Big-time loser over here, Ziggy. I love it. All the check marks.
I love it. You got the WWF trivia down. What do you want to say?
And of course, his manager,
Paul Bearer, who passed away 7 years ago, in real life, not in storyline. So,
what do you mean real life? It is real life wrestling.
Oh, right. You're one of those people who has to tell a wrestling fan that wrestling is.
It's real.
Real. You know, you know it's fake, right? You know it's predetermined.
Can of worms.
So we've been asking on the text line at 590-590 and a bunch are coming in. For athletes who've gone out on top, if we want to make the argument that The Undertaker went out at the top of his game. So we started firing this around the group chat yesterday in preparation for this segment. And it's weird the names that first come to mind. I've got two. I think one is pretty obvious. And we do date ourselves by age with some of these names. John Elway of the Denver Broncos, having competed in one, maybe two Super Bowls and having won neither to that point in his career, won Super Bowls back-to-back with the Broncos in the 97 and 98 season. So early 98, early 99, the actual games were played, and he rolled out. He went out with back-to-back rings. And then I'll never forget, I was a kid at the time, I'll never forget Lanny McDonald in his final year in the National Hockey League with the 88-89 Calgary Flames, winning the Stanley Cup.
Yeah, that was great.
Over the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah,
yes, sorry for the bad memory there.
You know, I was really happy for him, though, because he was a guy that I admired growing up, you know, watching Hockey Night in Canada, Lanny McDonald. I hated that the Flames won, but I was glad that Lanny McDonald got a ring. Him and his mustache.
Ray Bork. I think Ray that's got to be like, and it was his last. It was his last year that he went out on top. I think the fact that you can win and not play again, it has to be one of the toughest things, especially for someone that hasn't won. If he had won with Boston a couple times and then he goes to Colorado, you get your last couple of years, you win again, I can understand players that stop playing, but to not win your whole life and win one and say that's enough for me, because after winning one you want to win again. Once you get the taste for it, you see what it's like, you want to win again. And that's just I think if somebody that can win one and then just hang him up, I think,
but
it's
the fact Zig, and you would know this best out of all of us because you played. Bork at that point had been around for what, 15 or 20 years. He was pushing 40 years old. At some point, I think the body
20
starts,
years.
Yeah, I think
20 years he played.
At some point, the body starts to tell you, I can't do this anymore.
20 years, 1,600 games he played, to over 200 in the playoffs as well. So, yeah, it's a lot of games. Yeah.
And some deep runs, like the 88 Bruins went to the Cup Final, lost Edmonton, the 1990 Bruins. Went to the Cup Final, so also lost Edmonton.
So the fact that he was only with Colorado for a full season and a little bit, that doesn't taint his cup victory does it? Because he was there for the full year. If he'd only come in like halfway through his final year and was a member of the champion team, that might have tainted it a little bit.
You know what? I originally thought that when you're watching that or you're looking at players that just change teams and win. And then after going through everything with Pittsburgh, not at all. It's so hard to win.
Yeah.
That even if you even halfway through a season, you need 100 things to go right. You need so many plays that if they go the other way, a breakaway, a special team power play, it could change the game and change a series. So the fact that you get moved, I know after being in one spot your whole career, that's what I used to think too. I'm like, it's not that big of a deal. You just went to a stacked team. You played one year at what? You're just going somewhere to win? Nah, it's really difficult and it still means as much.
Yeah. And his last year, he was really good too. He had 7 goals and 52 assists. So it wasn't like he was just riding the pine.
No. And if you think back in his career, who dominated the 80s? Well, out west, or I guess they called it the Campbell Conference at that time, it was the Oilers, right, or the Flames.
Yeah.
And Boston was always bumping into the Montreal Canadiens, who were still an elite team at that time, right? We're still winning Stanley Cups.
Cubs won in 86. When you say that. I love when you say that.
Oh, it was so long ago, Hugh. You know, it's always funny, if I could digress here for a
sure,
minute, back
why
in
not?
The early 90s when the Leafs were about 25 years removed from their last Stanley Cup, that's all I ever heard about from friends my age.
Yeah.
I'm like, we're 10, we're 11, we're 12 years old. I haven't seen my team win in 12 years, not 25 years.
Yeah.
Well, now we're almost 30 years past the Habs last winning the Cup.
Yeah, it's getting there.
And I know
isn't
the
it?
Leafs are north of 50 years. So
it's almost time for one of those teams to putter, get off the green.
Joke still persists. But if 25 years was bad at the time, you can't be happy that you're almost 3 decades on.
So
that's all I wanted to say.
I'm glad you said it. So is the metric for this, you have to win in your final season? You have to win a championship?
No, you could be an elite player.
So I got a couple of names. I got a couple of names maybe that weren't on this list we were talking about last night. Barry Sanders.
And he said, screw it.
Yeah, he just left at the absolute height of his ability.
And while we're talking about Detroit Lions, Megatron did it too.
Yeah, exactly. Just walked away from the game. Like,
I feel like football,
prime.
Though, I feel like football's a more of a health reason. Guys are like, well, why am I going to play to the end? Have all these problems that guys have. Why don't I just quit now? I got a ton of money. I'm not being forced out of the game. I don't need to play if I don't want, and that's it.
Yep.
But it's surprising.
Yeah, major respect for them to just stop when you're at the. I really think it's hard. Guys always ask me how long, you know, should I keep playing? I'm like, play till you can't play anymore. Because once you're done, there you're not coming back. Like it's tough after. But yeah, I feel like football is more of a health. Guys quit because of health more than anything, and we're starting to see it now, right?
Yeah, I'm actually surprised more guys don't do it, but they probably have that attitude. Play as long as you can, get as much as you can.
Yeah, and
well, Brady's a good example. Everyone's like, why would you play if you're Brady?
Yeah,
well, he plays a position where as long as he's being protected, you can last.
Mm.
I mean, there's no way you could be a running back and be 40 years old. Although Frank Gore is trying to test that theory, but like, being a quarterback, as long as you're not getting hit and you can still throw the ball down the field, read defenses, you can hang in.
Brady knows that. What else is Brady going to do?
Anything
he wants, baby.
I know we think that, but guys have been, he's been doing this his whole life. He's got hundreds of millions.
You don't think Giselle wants him hanging around the house all day?
I'm just saying, guys.
How can I miss you if you never go away?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys that don't know what to do after, and the hundreds of millions aren't going to satisfy them. That's all I've got. Giselle's not even going to satisfy them.
I wonder if Tommy B ever throws on a headset as an offensive coordinator or head coach. Could you imagine that? There'd be some good facial expressions there. Best quarterback ever, arguably, frustrated that his team isn't playing well.
Comes back to head coach the New England Patriots.
I don't think he'll come and coach. I think once he's done, he's done.
He's done. Yeah.
you mentioned guys that don't get hit and are able to retire. How about Floyd Mayweather?
Yes.
He never got hit. 50-0, retired, walked away.
With how much money in his bank? Might owe a little in taxes.
But we say you didn't get hit. All the small hits, though, we don't know, right? We don't know.
Oh, he never...
We don't know what the small hits,
arguably the best defensive boxer in the history of the sport. I mean, he was so fast. Like, I never saw him got hit. I think he got hit a couple of times hard, and, like, that's it. But that's it. He was never a huge knockout guy either. So a lot of his fights
went on points. Right? Yeah. Our judges,
I think, decision. He only had 27 knockouts out of the 50 wins. So, and purely because I'm a gearhead and this name.
Oh, and there's a text in here for you too. So okay. I'll read that after.
Is it Nico Rosberg?
Yeah, damn right it is. Yeah.
Congratulations to whoever texted in, because you are probably...
It's Mike from Brampton.
Mike, I'm sure you're a handsome, intelligent individual.
Yeah, he says it pains him to say, as a Lewis Hamilton fan.
Yeah, because those guys hated each other as teammates, right? They were always butting heads. So Nico Rosberg finally won the F1 title, like his dad did years before, Kiki Rosberg. Nico finally wins in this, like, basically, yep, I'm done, see you later. Retired. Top of his game, world champion.
Allison in Toronto with a great one. Sandy Koufax won the Cy Young Award the year he retired. That's going out on top. The sad thing, of course, is that his arm was done.
Yeah.
And had he been along 20 or 30 years later, they might have been able to do some surgery and repair on that arm that would have extended his career.
He won the Cy Young and his arm was done. That's not bad.
Well, and he was also throwing like 330 innings every year.
Whereas Nolan Ryan would say the good old days.
Yeah, certainly the good old days. Jerome Bettis getting a lot of love, right? And they're... Back to your days in Pittsburgh, Zig, right? On that Steelers Super Bowl winning team, having played all those years in Pittsburgh, and before that with the Rams, having not won. Yeah, guys going out on top. Keep it, or athletes in general going out on top. And then I got one from Rick in Mimico, Happy Gilmore.
Yeah.
Don't want to forget about
Happy Gilmore.
No, especially after the throwdown with Bob Barker. Oh, that was good. He also wants to know if the Undertaker's theme song is better than Hulk Hogan's or vice versa.
Was Hulk's Real American?
Oh, that's Real American.
Because you could sing along to that.
When it comes crashing down, Hugh, and it hurts inside.
I got to go with a Hulkster because it's catchy. It's peppy.
Yeah, man.
I've had the Hulk Hogan come out to his music before a game and then rip his shirt off. In the corner, in Tampa Bay.
Oh, yeah, in Tampa.
Awesome.
Well, in the 2000s.
Why Tampa?
Because he lives down there.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And his daughter, Brooke, was singing the national anthem before home games in the 2004 playoffs.
They came in, played this music. They put him up on some crane lift.
Yes.
And then he ripped his shirt off, and then his daughter came out and sang the national anthem. And I was just like, I'm playing hockey in Tampa Bay, Florida right now with Hulk Hogan.
It's amazing.
You are playing like hockey in Tampa Bay.
Florida. We love Florida.
416-870-0590. 416-870-0590. We've got Untuckit gift cards to give away. $200 worth. We'd like you to win them. Dial up. Be our contestant. We play All or Nothing next.
Time to play All or Nothing with Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
$200 in Untuckit gift cards are available this morning. All or Nothing, three true or false questions, and you need to get them all right or all wrong. So, Ziggy, if you get the first one wrong, don't hang up, right? Because
you got to get two and three wrong as well.
Right, because it's all correct or all incorrect. Let's go up to Barry. The snow belt. And Andy. Still snow on the ground up there, Andy?
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. All right. It's going to melt this week. Good luck to you, my friend. Ziggy's got question number one.
All right. With his new contract, Fred Van Vliet is now the highest paid Raptor on the roster. True or false?
False.
That is correct. Siakam, a little over 30 mil. Lowry with 30 mil.
And Freddie is...
Freddie with 18 and change.
He's got an AAV up north of 21, but making about 19.
How's he going to make ends meet on that?
Poor guy.
That's what I want to know.
Andy, get the next two correct. and the Untucket gift cards are yours.
Okay, Andy, here we go. Dwayne DeRosario will join us on Leadoff just after 8:30 today. He is a two-time MLS Cup MVP, but neither title came while playing with Toronto. Is that true or is that false?
True.
Bingo. Yeah, he won with Houston in 2006, and he won with San Jose in 2001. Good stuff.
All right, Andy, for $200 in Untucket gift cards, usually at this time of year, the Grey Cup is being awarded, but not in 2020, of course. The CFL franchise with the most Grey Cup championships is the Toronto Argonauts. Is that true or false?
False.
That's a tough one because there was a long time from the early 50s to the early 80s when the Argos didn't win. So it is weird to say this, but actually the Argos with their 17 do have the most. Edmonton has 14. Winnipeg has 11.
Damn. Yeah, I would have picked the Blue Bombers over the Argos, no?
Would you?
Well, the Argos
yeah, I
are,
think I would have.
The Argos have been around like over 100 years.
Well, they're the oldest.
Yeah.
I think some people say they're the oldest North American professional
yes,
sports franchise, like the 1860s yep. or something like that. Apologies to Andy, but good news for you. $300 in Untucket gift cards up for grabs when we play All or Nothing at this time tomorrow morning. Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca at 7:30. On the Raptors post Ibaka and Gasol, Elvin Williams, the former Rap. Will join us at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. The aforementioned Dwayne DeRosario will be along at 8:30. Up next, Jaromir Jagr said what about Alexander Ovechkin and his pursuit of Wayne Gretzky? We'll discuss and debate. That's in minutes.
With Ziggy and Scotty Mac on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Got to speak. See, I got Ziggy on FaceTime. You are absolutely grooving right now. You are vibing to little Kim Mitchell. So apparently the rules on this show have changed now. We are taking a
shocking
yesterday conversation and moving it forward to today.
Okay.
Songs and lyrics that we screwed up and you thought Patio Lanterns was Patty.
Didn't think I'm saying Kim Mitchell may have done it. So there was talk around. I can remember some discussions on people saying, is it Patio Lanterns or is it a Patio Lantern?
That's the name of our Irish pub that we're going to.
It's got, there's got to be one already somewhere. There's got to be somebody in Ontario must have thought of this idea
first.
Just
Google Patty. O-Lanterns and see if it comes up as a pub.
Guaranteed there's a pub in Ontario or Canada, Patio Lantern.
We were having a show meeting with our assistant program director, Ryan Fabro, yesterday. I feel the need to shout this one out. It was a pretty good one. He said his name for an Irish pub would be Walk of Seamus.
Oh, okay.
Not bad.
Not bad.
And of course, Seamus would be spelled S-E-A-M-U-S.
Right. Okay.
Walk of yeah. Seamus, right?
Okay.
Irish name, pretty good. Not bad. Thumbs up. There you have it. Keep the text coming to 590-590. The today conversation that we're having today, not the yesterday conversation that we're having today, is about athletes who've gone out on top. This after the Undertaker retired from World Wrestling Entertainment on Sunday night after a 30-year run as the character, the Undertaker. Other athletes who've gone out on top. Lots of love for Jerome Bettis. Ray Lewis's name. Of course, he won the Super Bowl with the Ravens after the 2012 season and then promptly retire. We've talked about Ray Bourque and Lanny McDonald, John Elway, Floyd Mayweather. So there are a bunch of names. Keep the text coming to 590-590, and we'll continue to read them. Did you
How about Bo Jackson?
Well, did he go Maybe out on there? Top, though? The thing for him was that that injury just crushed
him. Injuries?
Well, yeah. That hip dislocation, that's got to be, if you're a pro sports fan, you don't have to cheer for a guy's team or whatever. Like, I'll never be a Raiders fan in my life. Never be a Kansas City Royals fan in my life. But Bo Jackson was something to watch in both sports. Mm. So the fact that he dislocated his hip in that January 1991 playoff game down at the L.A. Coliseum, the Raiders were an L.A. team at the time, playing Cincinnati. And it looked like, if you go back and look at that highlight on YouTube, Zig, it looks pretty innocent. It's not like a grotesque Alex Smith or Joe Theismann type injury. But he popped his hip and the bone started to die. I think some necrosis set in and it had to be fixed or replaced. And he was never the same in either sport. He retired from football right away. He had to. And then he was kind of relegated to designated hitting in Major League Baseball for a few more years. And he played with the Angels and White Sox. And that was it. I think Bo Jackson, in the what if category, Bo Jackson is at the top of the list. And I would argue that Bo Jackson would have been considered. I'm saying he would have got in, but would have at least been considered for both the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York. I think he was that good in both sports.
So injuries, so then like a Sandy Koufax, he had injury troubles. He's another guy that comes to mind, but he stopped because of injury. For women's, we didn't give a shout out. How about like Annika Sorenstam?
She was a
golfer, LPGA.
Epic.
I feel
golfer.
Like she kind of did. Like, did she quit to
she
raise
retired.
Her family?
Yeah, she retired.
Yeah, she retired. Like, I think she wanted to raise her family and not go on the road and stuff. But she had 72 victories, 10 majors. So,
and I'm going to make this argument too that Serena Williams, when she goes out, will still go out on top. I mean,
It doesn't
mean that she's cleaning up and winning the majors. It doesn't mean that she's losing in the finals.
I don't
of the
think
Aussie
she'll
Open
fall off. I don't think she'll fall off. She'll never fall off.
Serena Williams, if we do a Mount Rushmore, this will be a good challenge if you want. A Mount Rushmore, so you can only pick four, right? There's four faces.
I need like a week to get ready for this.
Best athletes.
Not right now.
Ever.
Next week. I need a week. That's too tough. That's so hard. I'm going to need an honorable mention. Like,
I think Serena Williams. Everything. I think Serena Williams is in that conversation. Muhammad Ali.
For sure. Yep.
Is there. And then all of a sudden you're saying to yourself, well, geez, I've got a boxer and I've got a tennis player. Where do I go next?
Yeah.
Because
I think that's too. Honestly, that's too hard to do. Like, how do you do four athletes?
Well,
you can't do that. I'm backing out of this
Are
one.
You backing? Sure. You're backing out of this one. What if I give you 2 weeks?
Sure.
I can see the gears turning in your head. I can see you sitting on that couch for hours, the smoke coming out of your ears as you debate, well, I could put this person there. But if I put them there, they've got to, oh, geez, I can't have both. No room. I could just see it.
Honestly, for athletes that went out on top, I still think, I know you're going to, this is a weird one, but Michael Jordan is there for me on athletes that went out. Like,
even though he came back later with the Wizards?
I know he came, it's strange because he came back later and then almost played too long, right? So he did the opposite of what we're actually, talking about. But when he first retired in what, 90, 93?
That's right.
So I still think that's the greatest athlete in any sport to stop playing and hang him up outside of injury. Michael Jordan, 93. Nobody, there'll never be a greater athlete that decided not to play anymore. I know he came back, so it doesn't really fit, but he retired. Well, he stopped playing.
It was huge news at the time. We all remember it when we were kids.
Yeah, and then we got to watch The Last Dance this summer, so, and look, peek behind the scenes there. I think they should do another 10 episodes.
Why
they
not?
Could do like a follow-up.
Oh yeah. Oh, well, they could do it. They could do a 30 for 30 on Jordan's life. That'd be fascinating. Lots of love for Barry Sanders on the text line. Multiple ones coming in. Michael Strahan from a 416 number. That's a good one. He won a Super Bowl with the Giants in his final year. And that was the first of the two Giants and Eli Manning Super Bowl victories over the Patriots. And he's, course, now a big-time star on Good Morning America and Fox NFL Sunday and all of that.
How about NHLer? He's in the Hockey Hall of Fame. How many years do you need to play for hockey to be in the Hall of Fame? How many years do you think you'd have to play?
Well, it depends. I mean, I think it's the effect that you had on the game.
So you don't have a number of years that you've had to play.
Did we get enough of Eric Lindros? No, we didn't. But he was concussed so badly, and he missed a ton of time. Like, if Eric Lindros would have been able to stay healthy for 17 or 18 years, imagine the numbers he would have put up and how we would have viewed him. But he fundamentally changed the game with the way that he was built and the way that he played. I mean, never had a guy that big possess such skill. And a guy who was willing to play that big possess such skill.
If I told you there was an NHLer that played 7 seasons and was in the Hockey Hall of Fame, would that I'm kind of surprised.
Okay, well, when are we going back? Are we going back? Did he miss 4 years for the Second World War? Or
No. We're talking in the 70s.
In the 70s. Very good.
I know. Yeah.
Good point.
I'm baffled that you could get in the Hall of Fame with seven years.
Yeah, but the other thing, don't lose sight of the fact that was he not on the 72 Summit Series team?
Right. I'm pretty sure.
So there's that, and then there was the series in 76. So there were a lot of epic moments. The Scotty Bowman coached Montreal Canadiens teams. How many cups did he win in those 7 years? Probably five or six.
Yeah. Five or six. Five.
And Ken Dryden, like, he's a really bright guy. He was just like, see ya. Because he had about 72 extremely things he wanted bright. To do in his life, right?
Yeah.
And he's been a
amazing
politician.
Person
he's run
on
the Leafs.
And off the ice. Yeah, great guy. You know, yeah, really smart.
We now have pub names coming in. McZiggy Locks. McZiggy Locks, L-O-C-H-S.
Yeah,
L-O-C-H-S. So, like, McZiggy Locks is the pub we need to open. Mark in Brampton. Gee, we got potential business partners here, Zig.
I'm getting a lot of Mayweather texts coming in. A lot of texts coming in right now for Floyd Mayweather.
Yep. Usain Bolt. Some love for Megatron, Kelvin Johnson.
So Usain Bolt, we were watching some Olympic stuff last week, and why couldn't he run more events? Like, why couldn't he do more distance events? Do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted to see him do something longer. So he did the 100, the 200, the 4x1. He never did the 400, correct?
Oh, no, I don't think so. But they're two totally different races.
I know,
races,
but just
though.
Give it a shot. Just get out there.
Yeah,
let's
just
go.
Get out there. Finish eighth. Who cares?
I just would like to have seen him do something a little bit longer. If you're that fast for 200, just do it twice.
What are you, lazy? What, is a 200 extra meters too much for you? I mean, geez.
Yeah,
you
just
run
do
100,
it
but you're not going to run the 200, or you're going to do 1 and 200, but you're not going to run the 400. What you,
or do something longer than do the
get off your ass, Usain Bolt.
Here's the thing. Do you think he tried? Do you think he tried to run the 4 or the 8 and just said, nope, I don't have the time?
I'm focusing on the shorter distances. Well, don't you specialize? I mean,
he trains in Kingston, Jamaica, even throughout all the years going to the Olympics and stuff. So my buddy lives in Montego Bay.
Yes, we've heard. That's when you ended up at Donovan Bailey's mansion.
Yeah, Donovan Bailey's house. He lives actually a close walk to him now. He moved. But you could just roll into Kingston and just walk onto a track and watch him. Like, no security, nothing. This is back when he was even stacking the golds.
He was a name.
You could literally just walk into a track and watch Usain Bolt play. That's all I got for you with that. I thought you'd find that interesting. You don't care.
No, I do. I do find it interesting.
Okay.
I mean, he's a national hero. I don't know what else to say. I mean, I'd be more than happy to go to a park and watch him warm up. That should have been the question, though. What you should have asked Andre DeGrasse when he was on the show a couple of weeks ago. Why do you think Usain Bolt only ran the 100, the 200, and the 4x100? Is it because he's lazy? You could have gotten a hot take out of Andre DeGrasse. You could have said
that would have been pretty funny.
Would have gone viral.
What did you think of saying that?
Completely undercut a great Canadian sprinter. Did you see?
Oh, I just got a tweet. Lennox Lewis.
Lennox Lewis, good one. Is he Canadian British?
I've played poker with Lennox Lewis.
Okay, so we're...
In Montego Bay.
Oh, geez, it's all coming together now. I've played poker with Lennox Lewis.
He lives in Montego Bay.
Was it in Donovan Bailey's living room? We need to bring this all together. No?
This is going to be a drop. I don't really want to say where. I can't do it. Don't look at me.
But then you do that. You do that, and we all want to
know. It was at the yacht club. I know. See, there, you just take a step back away from the microphone. I already know where this is going to go.
It was at the yacht club.
That's what it's called. Honestly, I would love, I was trying to find a different name for it, but there's nothing. It's the yacht club at Montego Bay.
Next commercial break, I am going to tweet out a link to the yacht club in Montego Bay. And anybody following us on Twitter can take a look at the pictures of that place. I bet it is pristine and beautiful. Poker at the yacht club in Montego Bay with Lennox Lewis.
I've seen better, but it's all right.
Jaromir Jagr, quote, earlier, I thought Ovechkin doesn't have any chances to break Gretzky's goal record. It was 6 years ago. But Alex has changed to become a better and more effective hockey player than he was in his youth. I think he works harder now. He'll be able to break Gretzky's record if he can stay healthy and keep working as hard as now. So Jagr asked whether he thinks Ovi can break Wayne Gretzky's goal record. Now, here's the deal. Wayne Gretzky scored 894 NHL goals regular season in 1,487 games for an average of 0.6 goals per game. Alex Ovechkin, 706 goals in 1,152 regular season NHL games for an average of 0.61 goals per game. So he is scoring at a better pace. And I don't know if he can close the... What is it now? 188 goal gap. When you consider, Ziggy, that this coming NHL season could be, not necessarily, but could be as much as 34 games fewer than a normal 82 game NHL season. And Ovi was denied his rookie season of 04-05. By a year-long lockout. He was selected in the 2004 draft. So he didn't start until 2005. And he was robbed of essentially a half a season in 2012-2013 by another lockout. Now the COVID stuff comes into play. Plus, he's getting older. Do you think he can pull off 188 goals? Will he have enough games and enough time to do it?
I've always said that he'll do it. And I said it around the time that he was scoring, when he scored his 500th goal. And did you have the stat there on how many games it took him? Was it 800? I feel like it was 801. Here it is. It's coming up right now. 801 NHL games, he scored his 500th goal. Is that what you got?
Yep.
Anyways. I feel like it was fewer games than that, though. But for him to score that amount of goals in this era, I think it's special. Wayne Gretzky had 500 in 575. But what's better? Like, what do you think,
what's more impressive to me. Here's what's more impressive to me, Ziggy, to your point about the era. If Alexander Ovechkin ends his career in the same position that he's in now, which is to say that he scored more goals per game than Wayne Gretzky, then I don't really need to have a debate. They're both great. They're both at the top of their games. They're both legendary players in the history of the NHL. But if Ovechkin ends up 40 or 50 goals short of Wayne Gretzky in X number of fewer games, you know, it's hard to differentiate at that point. Two completely different types of players and two completely different eras.
So it is, yeah, so it's 508. For me, that matters. The rule change in 05-06, it wasn't the 80s. And I hate saying that, oh, it was easier in the 80s or the 70s or the 60s. There was only six teams. Okay, winning a Stanley Cup with six teams, is it easier than winning it with 30, 31, or 32? Yes, your odds are just better. Okay, but I think for player statistics...
Look at the goaltending too, Ziggy.
I think you have to look at that. You have to look at coaching, and things have changed. But after, you know, it's... The rule change in 05-06 was big, and it's allowed him to get to that number. It's allowed him to get in that conversation. So the fact that he's... I still think it's tougher, even with the rule change, if you have to look at the goaltending, the coaching, the systems that teams put into play. I do think... So if I had to say what's more impressive, 575 in the 80s or 500 and 800 today... I would say today, even the 500 and 800. That to me, that's I think it's a tougher game. I don't take anything away from different eras and different decades, but the 500 and 800, that's a good stat. But he was still the fifth quickest to get there. Mike Bossy,
yeah,
Brett Hull, and Lemieux, and obviously Wayne is number one, 575. So I've always said he would do it when I was playing against him. He was just a guy that he played. For me, it was a goal scorer that played the game hard. And I think he's gotten better throughout his career. I think Jágr's also, he's on the record saying that he's gotten better. He's working. I agree with Jágr. I feel like he would kind of float a little earlier in his career. I don't know if it was so much floating or cherry picking that it was for the fact that he would just try to conserve his energy. I really think he's been the biggest threat on the left side of the power play with that one timer playing against them, being a penalty killer. It's almost impossible to stop.
Which is amazing because you know, it's coming,
you know, it's there
and it doesn't matter.
Still can't do anything. It also helps when he's played with good players. And aside from getting injured, I've said that he's played with great players. The Washington Capital organization,
the Nick Backstrom and Ovechkin tandem,
Kuznets. The Backstrom is the biggest one, but they've had a lot of different players that have worked well with them, and that matters. That's half the battle. Playing with guys that you feel comfortable with, you have chemistry. His power plays. I mean, if you look at his power play numbers, it's just such a dangerous group that he's played with, and it feels like it hasn't mattered. They've always found a way to make it work there, and it's centered around Ovechkin. And you know, I think it would be good for the game if he did it.
I sent this in last week. John in Norfolk County: work stoppages not only hurting players in the bank account, throw in the approximately 130 combined missed games from 04-05, 12-13, and last season, and at his career average scoring pace, Ovechkin would only be 98 goals behind Gretzky sitting here today.
Yeah.
And it's 188.
But you also have to remember, even if if he stays healthy and the pandemic doesn't cut these seasons short, but let's not forget, Wayne was a setup guy. He's a playmaker. Mm-hmm. And then he scored the most goals. So
@ Scotty Mac thinks, @ Mike Zigomanis on Twitter. The link to the yacht club in Montego Bay will be posted in the next couple of minutes. And then Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca on the other side on the new look Toronto Raptors. Change is always inevitable with our favorite championship teams. It can be difficult emotionally when a guy like Serge Ibaka walks away, but as I said, change is inevitable. Where do the Raptors slot in the Eastern Conference as we sit here today? Aaron Baines and Alex Len for Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol if we're looking strictly at bigs. Donovan will break it all down for us next. Montego Bay Yacht Club website. It is a nice place, Ziggy.
I've been to better yacht clubs.
You want to list them? I'm putting you on the spot.
Don't make me list the yacht clubs. I've been to a couple.
You've been to a couple yacht clubs?
I have a couple friends that have boats, yes.
A couple friends with boats.
I'm not going through this list. It's going to be on Twitter again.
Are these people whose names we would have heard of, or are these...
No, you don't know any of
them. People who lie in the weeds.
One of my buddies started Pita Pit. Have you ever been the sandwich place?
You know the Pita Pit guy?
Yeah, it's two guys. One guy still owns the majority, but my buddy sold out his half. They started it in the mid-90s in Kingston, Ontario. So he got out in like 2009, bought a yacht, and he had it docked at the Miami Yacht Club. So that was pretty special. He had it there, and he had it at Fort Lauderdale. So
was this a guy, is this a buddy you made when you played for the France?
No, actually, I met him. Yeah, I knew him when I played for the Frontenacs, and then when I got to pro, and it just kind of developed from there. I'd go back to Kingston a couple times every year after I played there. Right, still a lot of friends, so we'd always kind of run into each other. And then, you know, he's asking a bunch of us, "Hey, do you want to invest in this business?" And we're like, "Pita sandwiches, like." Not really.
You didn't.
Yeah, I was one of those guys. I was one of like the Google people that were working there and cashed out for like $2.10.
Look at you. And now you're sitting here with me.
I know. Yeah, that could have been a big one.
Dude, you could have made your money.
400 stores or something at one point, right?
Sure they did. You could have been a pita magnate.
Yeah, could have been the pita guy.
You'd have been a pita guy. So, how'd you make all your money in pitas?
Let me tell you, there was a lot of money in those pitas.
Oh, no question. I'll tell you what, there was a lot of money made at Pita Pits at 2 o'clock in the morning on Sundays.
Oh, yeah.
There is no doubt about that.
Their business model was to open around universities, and then they would be open late night. Those were like the two big things at the time,
yeah,
which nobody had done.
Right. I mean, that is definitely your target audience.
I mean, my buddy and his partner, they pretty much lived, they actually did live in the first Pita Pit. So they actually lived in the first one in Kingston, like they, for years, like no one talked to them. Apparently, I mean, that's all those stories of people that
grinding it out,
you know, you're an entrepreneur and you start a business. Yeah. You pretty much live at the business and that's all you do.
Mike from Flamborough. Ziggy, what was your favorite place or what were your favorite places to eat when you were on the road playing in different cities during your NHL career?
Oh, boy. Morton's was a big one.
That's a chain, right? Like, that's a high-end steak chain.
Yeah, high-end. Yeah, so that was a big one because they would do anything. If you eat meat or seafood, they have a lot of good veggie dishes you could kind of dig into. So if you're into the salads with a, you know, a little side of the main, that would kind of be my usual. I don't know. I didn't really eat a lot of the main dishes when I'd go to those places. A lot of times I would like grab another player or somebody I go with. Usually do you eat a full like 15-ounce steak when you used to go out, or a full piece of fish? See, like, I would split it in half and order an extra side and split that. Like, if I had a choice, I would split a main and then order, like, a lobster mac and cheese side.
Oh.
Yeah, so.
I can't envision you, first of all, eating red meat, and secondly, pairing up that red meat with a lobster mac and cheese. Like, this is just not the, this is not the you that we know. This is not the you that we know
at all. It happens. It happens.
From Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca, Donovan Bennett is with us to talk Raps, not just the weekend that was, but also what lies ahead with at least a temporary home down in Tampa. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good, fellas. How are you?
We are doing just fine. If you were to assess... both in the immediate, Donovan, and with the look ahead, because a lot is pointing to the 2021 offseason, if you were to assess the work of Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster over the weekend, how would you assess it?
I would think it's good. Like I was saying to Tim McAuliffe yesterday on Tim and Sid, you know, we're all doing our self-reviews now as employees at the end of the calendar year. And I think like when they check that box, they're checking exceeds expectations. I think it's beyond satisfactory. I mean, you had two major goals in this offseason. One, to re-sign Fred VanVleet to a number that is fair, but also a number that doesn't hamper you in the future. And two, to maintain your cap flexibility in the upcoming offseason and beyond, and you completed those two goals. Anything else was immaterial. Would it have been nice to get Serge Ibaka to come back? Yes. Did people start to, you know, desire Marc Gasol a lot more once Serge Ibaka had decided to go to L.A. Than they did, you know, when they were losing to the Boston Celtics? Yes, but I just love the fact that they didn't overreact. They stuck to their plan. They got the important business done, which was Fred. Yeah, I think it sent a signal to not just the player, but to the league that not only can we develop stars, that we'll take care of them once we do. I think, you know, he's certainly not a star yet, but the same can be said for Chris Boucher, who they got done, who is an ascending asset. And we'll take up some of the center minutes that are gone. And then they got a bunch of competent, you know, league average players or above league average players, but from a stylistic standpoint and a cultural standpoint in Alex Len and Aaron Baines that will fit into what they're trying to do. And most importantly, they won't have guaranteed contracts a year from now. So I think it was a really, really strong offseason. And I was a little surprised. I mean, we know that in sports and politics and all things, you know, social media isn't the best litmus test on how things are going or how people should feel. But I was a little surprised at how anxious, I would say, Raptors fans were. But I think in the short term and the long term, I think they're going to be just fine.
But Donovan, I think you know as well as anybody why that is, right? And that is the ability to move on from something so beloved. You know, I don't think it's a fair comparison necessarily because they didn't win a championship, but people were angst-ridden when Edwin Encarnacion didn't return after the 2016 season, when it was clearly going sideways with Josh Donaldson, when Jose Bautista was apparently on his way out the door, and in fact, he might have been kept for one season too long back in 2017, but that team was being broken up. This was inevitable for the Toronto Raptors, but I do think as fans, and it doesn't surprise any of us, we get caught up in our feelings in the immediate. We never want the run as we know it to end. And I think we're anxious because we always wonder if we can get back to that sweet spot.
Yeah, and I get that. And I would have just said to Blue Jays fans, well, if re-signing Edwin and Jose Bautista means that you don't have an opportunity for Mike Trout or Mookie Betts, I mean, which would you prefer? And you know, I think that's the comp here, is that bringing back some players that you've seen win a championship that you love could impede your ability to have sustained success for the next 10 years. And the difference is the Raptors won a championship, you know, like in short memory. The Blue Jays, you have to be older and older now to remember what 92 and 93 were like. I feel, I don't know, so old and so like personally distraught when we have interns come around Fan 590 or Sportsnet, and they, not only did I remember that the Jays won a World Series, but they weren't alive. I'm just like, I don't really understand how that's possible.
And they weren't alive by like 5 or 6 years.
Yeah. It's just so personally upsetting for me, but I think that we've moved the goalpost as a franchise, and the expectations should be higher, and thus the reactions should mature a little bit. Raptors fans know better than anybody what it's like to lose in the conference finals or the second round. It's not really all that different. Like, the feeling isn't that different. So whether or not this team is a 3 seed or a 5 seed or a 6 seed or fights for home court for 2 rounds instead of one, what does it matter? Is that home court going to have fans in it? Is it going to be in Toronto or Tampa Bay? Ultimately, none of that matters. You won a championship. You know what that feels like. And so that should be the expectation and the goal. And anything you do in the short term to put yourself in a less optimal position to win a championship in the long term, I don't think is a positive step. So what are the win shares that you're losing going from Serge Ibaka and Marc Gasol to Aaron Baines and Alex Len and an internally improved Chris Boucher? 10? No. In a shortened season, probably not. 2, 3, maybe. And so I'm happy to punt those 2 or 3 games or wins if it means that when Giannis potentially is a free agent a year from now, and when the 4 stars in L.A. On those 2 L.A. teams and a bunch of stars across the league are free agents, I have ability to go after them. And the other thing I should say is everyone's fixated on, well, what's the track record of bringing in top-level free agents in this city? A bird in the hand is better than 2 in the bush. That's true. I get it. But this front office has shown the ability to make trades with cap space to bring in great players. In every other week, there's another disgruntled star in the NBA who wants to be moved. And so the fact that you put yourself in that conversation, remember the players that brought you a championship, Kawhi Leonard, Kyle Lowry, they got to Toronto via trade. And so even if it's not just for the free agents that are coming up in the upcoming summer, I still think that flexibility matters a lot.
So, yeah, with the free agents coming up next year, and it's going to be a deep class, with the Fred VanVleet signing, does this change the perception of what people think of the Raptors? Because I just feel like, people kind of say around, in media, when you're on Twitter, social media, it's a small market team. No one wants to go to the Raptors. And I hate hearing that narrative. But, with Kawhi Leonard not coming back next year, it just fueled that even more. Does the Fred signing for 4 more years, change the way people look at the Raptors?
Yeah, I mean, an educated agent would say, small market team or not, they just spent $105 million in free agency. So it's not like they're counting their pennies. Certainly, when they see value, they're willing to invest. And I think Fred is a great example of that. Has Fred earned that contract? 100% he has. Did the Raptors have to go to that number given the lack of competition by the time free agency started? Probably not. They were probably at that point bidding against maybe the New York Knicks because the Detroit Pistons spent their cap space to Chicago Bulls, dealt with the point guard position via the draft. The Phoenix Suns went out and got Chris Paul, the Milwaukee Bucks went out and got Drew Holiday. So there was less competition on the market. But I think it shows that, listen, we are going to take care of our own. And whether or not it's Kyle Lowry, who we put an extra year on his contract and gave him some money and showed him respect for helping us win that championship, or making a very fair and reasonable offer to reward Fred VanVleet for his service, or even players who are not around. People feel like DeMar DeRozan was somewhat disrespected because he was traded. He also just opted in to a contract that Masai Ujiri offered him that is paying him handsomely. So I do think that, you get a reputation around the league on Are you an organization that's going to try and not just win every deal, but win every deal to an exorbitant amount? And I think they've shown that they're willing to spend, if you handle yourself the right way on and off the court and you fit their culture. And Fred's an example of that. And I think, forget about high-level free agents who will want to know who their point guard is going to be moving forward. And now, whether or not Kyle continues to play, they'll know that they'll have high-level play with Fred VanVleet there and a team-first guy. I think on the other end, when you're looking to maybe remake your career or get a new start or just be developed internally, is there a better situation? Who's shown, whether it's picks late in the lottery in the second round or more often than not undrafted players, one organization who's shown, yeah, we can take you and we can, you know, make you the best version of yourself, whether it's Pascal Siakam or Fred VanVleet or in a short span, Terrence Davis or now Chris Boucher. So I think on both ends of the spectrum as free agents, Toronto and the front office has shown that this is a place that it makes sense for your basketball life to play. I think the real question is, are the two of the most important people for that to be the case, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster, are they going to be in the chairs that they're currently sitting in to make that pitch? I think more than anything about people worried about which push alert they're going to see in terms of who's siding with the Raptors, that's the breaking news that I think Raptors fans should be yearning for and should be anxious about.
Always appreciate the insight, pal. Look forward to getting through the pandemic so we can hang out and chat sports. Hope things are well, and we'll catch up again soon.
Likewise. Take it easy, fellas.
Donovan Bennett of Sportsnet, sportsnet.ca. It is us. It is we. It is not just Ziggy. We're cleaning out our prize closet with the help of Jiffy, and we have made mystery boxes which contain signed jerseys and more for you to win. To enter, you need to listen during Good Show, Writer's Block, and Tim and Sid every weekday to collect keywords. Then you text them to 590-590 with your first name, last name, and city. And then you tune in every morning at this time for your chance to qualify. So we're about to tell you who we drew from all of the entries we got yesterday. And if it's you, call us back within 590 seconds to immediately win $100 to spend at Jiffy and to qualify for this week's mystery box, which we'll hand out on Monday at 7:30. We've drawn the name Brian Rahman from Whitby. Brian Rahman from Whitby. Your 590 seconds starts now. Call us at 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. Everyone else can stay tuned for the next keyword during Good Show after 9 a.m. and check out sportsnet.ca/590 for contest details. Dwayne DeRosario and Elvin Williams next hour. Business idea for you, Ziggy, on the text line. No name, but a 519 number. So this is coming from like Kitchener, London, Cambridge area. Ziggy opens his own pita restaurant called Pita O'Lanterns.
Why are you encouraging him?
Okay. You know, Scotty loves it.
I just love it.
It's actually pretty clever. But
okay.
Don't encourage okay. it, please.
I always wanted to open up my own place called the Healthy Scratch. Like when I played Healthy Scratch, like
I just wanted to hear you explain it.
Do you get it?
Yeah, I do.
I don't think people understand it. So Healthy Scratch is what you call a player when you're get scratched from a game when you don't play. You sit out. You get told your health. That happened more games than I played.
Yep.
I was told that you're being a healthy scratch today, but healthy scratch also means
healthy food.
There right? you go.
There you go. Yeah, like so, probably greenery or whatever. You know, get your roughage.
Like that.
So it could be like healthy scratch, lived experience, something like that.
Something like that. But that's kind of what I've always wanted. I've always wanted to open up my own.
And
pub,
I think
my pub food that was like healthy stuff.
And in the very same way that Pita Pit opened up restaurants around universities, you can open them up around yacht clubs because the yacht club clientele
my
is looking
Twitter
for
right
roughage.
Now is exploding because of you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
I am turning Twitter off for the rest of
you
the day.
You are
at
very welcome. Very welcome. Dwayne DeRosario at 8:30, the former Toronto FC great. The Reds play a playoff game tonight against Nashville in East Hartford, Connecticut. And Elvin Williams, we've talked a lot about how we feel about the changes in Raptors land. Now, how do we draw it all up? What will it look like schematically when the Raptors take the floor in about a month to start the new season? Elvin Williams joins us next. I'm always scared when I see you swigging something on FaceTime that you're deep into one of your garlic drinks or whatever you're going through.
If I don't have breakfast in the morning, or it's not a smoothie, I go straight liter of water, and then I'll do like a turmeric cup, like turmeric powder from the curcumin root.
Sure.
So you blend that up, and then you have some cracked pepper, cayenne pepper in water, and then I splash it with some apple cider vinegar for some taste.
Okay.
That sounds delightful, huh?
Elvin Williams is going to join us in just a little bit. I wonder if he is as crazy an ex-athlete as you are. The irony about you, Ziggy, is that you seem to have gone healthy after your playing career.
No, when I was playing. But it was
toward the end, though.
Towards the endish, yes.
You didn't appreciate what you had while you had it.
Well, who
I think,
in their 20s
does? I'm doing a deeper dive on you now. I thought we're okay. Playing a more psychological game here. Now, you didn't appreciate what you had in the early to mid-2000s.
Hey, I'm not disagreeing with that one bit. You get to 39, you appreciate what you had in your 20s.
We need to do a 2 or 3 hour thing on Sportsnet. What was Ziggy's life like from 2000 to 2005?
Yeah, that's a strong.
No. There's not a lot of footage. Pre-cell phone footage. That didn't exist. That didn't exist. We've got Elvin. Awesome. Okay, Elvin Williams, Raptors and NBA. Analyst for Sportsnet is with us now. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
We're doing real well. So let's start kind of with the blanket question, Elvin, and then we'll do a bit of a deeper dive. As you look at the weekend that was in the free agency rush and the trades that were made, are the Raptors better positioned, equally positioned, or slightly lesser positioned for this season and this season only in the Eastern Conference?
When you say better position for what you mean?
Well,
championship, playoff?
Yeah, well, I think we know where they're a playoff team, but would you still classify them as upper echelon potential Eastern Conference representatives in the NBA Finals the same way that we would have considered them that in this year that just passed?
No, I wouldn't have them in the upper echelon right now. Of course, there's a lot that has to be played out, continued free agency, other transactions. And then you got to watch the guys play. I'm a big person. I'm a fan of players getting better, development. And the Raptors have shown that over the years, players that you may not have heard of and, you know, that not expected much of and play their butts off because of the development and the coaching style and just the chemistry that the team's had. So you never discredit that. But right now, when you lose two guys like a Serge Ibaka and a Marc Gasol, right, and those are big pieces of your team, those are veteran guys, this was part of your team when you were winning a championship and last year. So when you lose those type of people, you can't just think you're going to be right in the mix unless you can fill those spots. And the Raptors have yet to do that. So right now, I wouldn't have the Raptors at the top echelon because there's a lot of good teams right now. But everyone still has to prove themselves early on.
Yeah, so Ibaka and Gasol are gone. Baines, Len coming in. Boucher re-signs 2 more years. how different do you think this Raptors team is going to have to play, and can they get it done with those three guys as their bigs?
And once again, your expectations. You know, you still have great guard play in Kyle Lowry, Fred VanVleet. You still have Pascal Siakam, who's going to get better, OG, and Anunoby. I feel like those four players right there who've been through it, who's been winning, who's keep developing, and you have a leader such as Kyle Lowry who's going to lead the charge on the court and off the court, you always have a chance. So I believe that the Raptors will be a tough opponent. I believe that they have the potential to continue to grow and get better and compete in the East. But once again, once you lose a few pieces and you haven't replaced it, it's going to take a hell of a coaching job by Nick Nurse, which we know he can do. And you look at yourself last year, people didn't expect much out of Toronto last year after losing Kawhi Leonard. And we see what happened with the team. So I would never discredit, once again, the Toronto Raptors and the mentality and the approach that the team has shown in the past years for a good almost about 8 or 10 years now.
Now, with Fred coming back for 4 more years and Kyle in the last year of his contract, how do you see this year playing out with that? Is this going to be like the passing of the torch? Is this you think Lowry might come back on a lesser deal? How much how do you see Fred playing out in this year with Kyle in his last year?
I see Fred playing his butt off, but I see that lineup with the two working hand in hand. It's like it's a combination. One isn't as effective as the other, and the team is definitely not good if you don't have both of those guys playing alongside of each other. I think those are the two things that give other teams, you know, a lot of problems. When you have two ball handlers, you have two scorers, you have two defensive-minded guys, you have two unselfish guys, and they're pretty much almost the same type of players. That gives the Raptors an advantage. So without the other, I believe the team is hurt. And it depends on what Kyle is feeling. It depends on how the direction of the team is going. You know, Kyle is somebody that I'm sure wants to stay in Toronto. I'm sure he enjoys playing and enjoys his time there in Toronto. So I would be surprised if I didn't see Kyle finish his career in a Toronto jersey. But this is the business of the NBA and pro sports, and you just never know. You never know what happens from day to day. But hopefully the Raptors can make sure this combination sticks.
With Elvin Williams, and I want to pick up on that point, Elvin, because I think it's a fascinating one. Kyle, look, and he's a smart guy. He's a business guy. Great basketball player, but also a business guy. Basketball players, pro sports, pro athletes, independent contractors, more or less. He made a little bit of noise last year wanting more security. He was entering the final year of his contract, coming off an NBA championship. He secured that with the $30 million extension for this coming season. If you want to call it a lame duck year or a pending free agency season, that's where he's headed into right now. Why would he be okay with that scenario this year when he wasn't cool with it last year? Is it simply an understanding of the business?
The understanding of the business, or it could be, you know, Kyle may have other thoughts of how he wants to end his career. I haven't had the opportunity to talk to Kyle about any of these things, but, you know, these players, they go through so much. You know, going into last year, like you said, you have the actual fact of having leverage, you know, winning a championship, playing your butt off, being a big part of that. And, you know, let's push the envelope and see if I can get my extension, which I think I deserve. And that could be that mindset. Going into this season, it's a totally different, you know, approach. There's no championship under your belt, you know, from the previous year. And, you know, you've lost a few other key components on the team. So is the team taking a different route, you know, and players – there's a lot of conversations that sometimes happen that we're not privy to. So who knows what the approach for Kyle Lowry is. But I believe he's going to be a professional. He's going to handle his business the way he needs to handle his business for him to continue to have value and for the team to continue to win.
With Elvin Williams, Sportsnet's Raptors and NBA analyst, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So if I'm Malachi Flynn and I'm coming into this situation, you know, Freddie grew a lot under Kyle's tutelage. Malachi has the opportunity to grow under both Kyle's and Freddie's tutelage. what are those relationships when they're healthy like, Elvin? Because I think we use these big, broad statements. Well, Malachi Flynn will learn a lot from the Kyles and the Freds of the world. What are the actual things he will learn, and what are the ways in which they can sit him down and help him grow his game?
Well, so you're going to learn just by being on a job, right? And it, once again, it goes into who Malachi Flynn is. Like, is he receptive? Is he a respectful young gentleman? Is he eager to learn? Is he eager to go through the ups and downs? Is he eager to go to the G League if necessary? So you're going to learn just a lot just by soaking things in that locker room, seeing how Kyle Lowry prepares, see how Fred VanVleet prepares, and even off the court. So as a young guy, you just sit back and you ask questions, you observe, and you just go out there and work your butt off. And whatever is asked of you, you try to give it. And you're just going to learn. You're just going to soak it up like a sponge in that way. And I believe today's league, it's not like, you know, when the person would get drafted in your same position and you're feeling very insecure. A lot of players, they play on the floor at the same time. Multiple positions are you know, asked doing the same thing. So it's just not, you know, you're our point guard and you do the one thing and whoever else fall in line, you get your chance when you get your chance. It's a possibility that they all may be out there on the floor at the same time. So you have to be, once again, very receptive. And Kyle and Freddie, they have the personalities where they enjoy being mentors, especially Kyle. He enjoys being a mentor. He enjoys being a leader. He enjoys leading by example. So he's in a great position to learn and continue to grow right under those two guys.
DeMarcus Cousins signs with the Rockets, and he's looking for kind of a bounce-back season, battled injuries last couple of years. Does that change anything with that organization with Harden and Westbrook, or do you think that they'll want to stay now?
I don't think so. I think those guys are pretty much, you know, set the tone of, you know, not signing extensions and, you know, being vocal about, you know, not being as happy or as content as you would want your two best players to be. But with a signing like DeMarcus Cousins, it's just, you know, where he is at his career, you know, trying to get back, trying to prove, fight through injury. He's not the player that, you know, he was a few years back. And he doesn't even have that cachet right now because, you know, the one-year deals. It gives you a different light on a player. So I think those players, James Harden and Russell Westbrook, these guys, they know the business, as you spoke about Kyle Lowry. They know the business as well. They know their value, and they know they can go other places for other reasons, whether it's on the court presence or it's off the court opportunity. So I don't think that they will have, by signing DeMarcus Cousins, it would make a big difference.
Particularly with Harden, Elvin, would you be surprised if he begins the season with the Rockets? I mean, we're closing in on the start of training camp here, so it's hard to ask you to make a prediction about what could go down in the next week. But in terms of starting the season on December 22nd or thereabouts, would you be surprised if Harden is in a Houston shirt?
No, I wouldn't be surprised because, you know, Houston, you know, from a business standpoint, they have the trump card right now. You know, he's still under contract for two more years, and they don't have to make a rush. They already pitched an extension. I'm more surprised that a man turns down $50 million a year.
I wouldn't.
I'll take that 2 years in a heartbeat. But I mean, the Rockets have, you know, I would say the upper hand possibly, but you know, I wouldn't be surprised because, once again, I wouldn't rush. I wouldn't rush making a decision, especially when you're somebody as good as James Harden, and, you know, teams would definitely want a James Harden. So if you can hold on as long as you can, and you seem like a bit of that with AD a few years ago, you hold on and try to get as much as possible for that type of talent. And if you're Houston Rockets, you just have to be patient and not be forced into anything. You can't listen to the outside noise. You can't listen to, you know, a lot of things that go on internally. You have to make sure you make the best decision for your organization, and you can get the most out of whatever decision you make in the future.
You know, the NBA is as good a league as any, Elvin, for drama. We know that. And so the idea of James Harden ending up in Brooklyn is fascinating because it could go oh so right, or it could be a very complicated situation. In a hypothetical world where James Harden is a Brooklyn Net playing alongside Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. How does that work and work well?
I mean, I think you take that team a couple boroughs over to Harlem and go to Rucker Park and play outside in the playground with that team. Because it's hard. I mean, of course, you have Steve Nash, who's, you know, who I believe will be a great basketball mind and a motivator and somebody that can relate to the guys. But, you know, as a coach, you wonder how much can you implement, right? It's definitely going to be styles. It's definitely going to be all those things involved. But you have guys with egos. You have guys that are MVPs. You have guys that won championships. You have guys that have individual style of play. And as a coach in today's game, there's a lot of things you have to make sure that mesh before you even think about winning a championship. And with new personalities, new style of plays, and similar style of play with certain guys, it's going to be a tough matchup. I'm not as sold on that lineup as some other people would be because of the style. All great players, some of the best players I've ever seen, I think the NBA I've ever seen. But once again, it takes so much more than just talent to win. It takes chemistry, it takes unselfishness, and it takes a lot of sacrifice. And if those players, your best players, aren't willing to be the first ones to do that, then your team is not going to be as successful as they possibly can be.
Yeah, and I like that point you make about the culture and what it's not just what you do and skill level of players. It's kind of, it's a mix of everything, right? How the chemistry between the players. One guy for the Raptors that brought that was Serge Ibaka. Do you think he's going to change the way the Clippers play? You know, you can say they have a disappointing finish this year, losing to the Nuggets in the bubble. With Paul George and Kawhi Leonard now, do you think he'll change the culture and chemistry maybe in that room?
You know what? I don't think a player will come in there and do that. And not when you have veteran players, not when you have, you know, a team that's made up or, you know, their identity has been behind two players with, you know, Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. A lot went into getting those two guys together. And I think more so the coaching staff is going to have to change that culture. I think their approach, how they hold people accountable. You know, we've heard some whispers about, you know, there was some type of treatment that players got, preferential treatment. And, you know, I think it's going to be the coaches. It's going to be how they approach day-to-day through the practice schedule, through the game schedule, through, you know, training camp. It's not going to be one player. Now you have the player that can support the coach and understand what the coach needs because, like you mentioned, we've seen Serge be a starter. We've seen him, you know, sacrifice and go to the bench, and he, you know, change his role a little bit. So he is the player that can help the coaches, you know, deliver that message and speak that tone. But I don't think it's going to be one player with the personnel and the personalities of this team. It's going to fall into the coaches and getting everyone else to buy in. Like, all right, this is the approach we're going to have to take if we want to be the team that we say we want to be.
Training camp just around the corner and the regular season about a month away. Elvin, we'll be calling on you a lot. Thanks for this chat, and look forward to speaking again.
Thanks a lot. Great talking to you guys.
You bet. Elvin Williams, former Rap and Sportsnet's Raptors and NBA analyst.
I think that's going to be the biggest. I'm more concerned about that, the Serge Ibaka in the room. We've seen him on all these specials, and Tim and Sid had all the stuff that, you know, Ibaka did with the team and his relationships he had. You need that in the room to win. I'm a big believer in that. Oh. I'm not so sure, and it's so certain it's going to change maybe the Clippers, but for a lot of teams, I've been on a lot of winners. I've been on a lot of good teams, and usually you have that one. And it's not so much like the funny guy in the room, or you say like the class clown, but you need guys to break up because some teams can get really serious and the tension can build up. So you need that in the room from time to time, especially when things aren't going well, or, you know, you're in the dog days of the season where maybe you're practicing a lot or things aren't going the way they should be going. That happens with every team. So when you have a guy like Ibaka, it's not so much what he does on, but more often in the room.
Text coming into 590-590 on the variety of different topics that have come up on the program this morning. Anthony and Hamilton on athletes who went out on top. We're missing the most obvious name, he says, David Ayers. we're never going to live that down. Never going to live that down in this city. And how about Dave Purchase?
That will never go away.
David Ayers. Dave Purchase.
Yeah. Don't get me started on that. You just love doing that.
No, we yelled at each other about the David Ayers situation and that
we don't see eye to eye on that one.
No, you thought that the Leafs were losers for that
game.
Regardless.
Lose.
And I said if you're gonna be looked at as a loser because you needed a Zamboni driver to come in and be your opposing team's goaltender, well, at least be a loser that walks out of there with the 2 points. Like, just get the 2 points and get the hell out of there. And it's not your fault that James Reimer and Peter Mrazek got hurt. See, now we're yelling at each other again, and it was like 9 months ago, 10 months ago, whenever the hell it was.
It was in February.
Yeah, so 9 months ago. 9 months ago.
And it's going to, it'll come, that's going to be, you know how we do the anniversaries, we do the World Series wins and the whatever, the Stanley Cup
Finals
games. The
Babcock firing on Friday.
We're going to do the Ayers. It is going to be on the radio for life.
Yeah.
In Toronto.
We might start early that day just so that we can get a fourth hour of an analysis.
We're going to do a bonus hour on the pod.
5 a.m. A 5 a.m. start.
You say bonus pod hour?
Oh, yeah. Bonus hour on the pod. Yeah. Dave Purchase, which, by the way, is a great last name. I started a cafe last year in Whitby with my wife, Brock Street Espresso. We have a super beet latte that I think you'd love, Ziggy. And beet is B-E-E-T, like the red vegetable thingy.
Thank you. B-E-E-T? Okay. Yeah.
B-E-E-T.
I hate to misspell that one.
Yeah. So there you go. That's from Dave Purchase. So you'll have to head up to Brock Street in Whitby once COVID passes us. The great Toronto FC, Dwayne DeRosario, is going to join us on the other side. The Reds, and I'm using air quotes, host Nashville SC in round one of the 2020 MLS Cup playoffs tonight. And that game is in East Hartford, Connecticut. We'll talk to DeRo.
They don't have an accent in Connecticut.
Oh, they've got an accent.
They don't,
in Connecticut.
But keep going. Yeah,
I just wanted to say Hartford.
It's not New England.
D-Rose next. Dwayne DeRosario in just a couple of minutes as Toronto FC gets set to kick off their run through the MLS Cup playoffs.
DeRo on the show.
Thank you for calling me out for East Hartford before the break.
I had to do it. Just couldn't let you go the rest of the show thinking you said something smart when it wasn't.
No, Connecticut's more New York, right? And New Hampshire is more New England.
No. I lived in New Hampshire, so I do know this. It's very Canadian.
Very Canadian.
As soon as you cross that border from Massachusetts into New Hampshire, that deep, thick New England accent is gone.
Gone. Wow.
I don't know what happens. That imaginary line, gone. I did. I lived in Nashua, New Hampshire for a year. And I've lived outside of Boston for three.
That's another Sportsnet documentary series, Places I've Lived, yes, with Mike Zygmunis. A little Lowell, Massachusetts, a little Nashua, New Hampshire.
We could do a four-part series in Lowell.
We could.
Maybe five.
Maybe four. How long would the episodes be? 5 minutes each? Jam-pack a ton of information in there.
You remember Mickey Ward, the boxer?
Yes.
Yeah, I used to hang out with him.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think you've told that story.
I briefly talked about it. We'll do a whole segment on it.
That's a hook. We'll do a whole segment on your friendship with Mickey Ward as you name drop. speaking of great former athletes, it's not just Mike Zygmunis. Dwayne DeRosario, the great Toronto FC player from 2009 to 2011. He returned in 2014, a two-time MLS Cup MVP championships in San Jose and Houston back in the day. He is with us now as Toronto FC gets set to kick off its MLS Cup playoff run with a game against Nashville in East Hartford, Connecticut tonight. Dwayne, how are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good to have you on. So, I mean, you're not living it yourself, but you can speak to it as a former pro athlete. What do you think life has been like for the Reds this year through COVID and then the return to play and living in Hartford, Connecticut, keeping focus and being one of the best teams in Major League Soccer with all of that in front of them?
Well, I can tell you it's much better living it for sure. Hmm. But it is a challenge. It is a difficult time for everyone, especially as for TFC being away from home for so long. Playing in a playoff, not having your home field advantage, like I said, being away from home, it does pose a lot of challenges. And I think we've seen some of the effects of it, especially towards the end of their season where they struggled a little bit. But I think having this time off, this little break before this game tonight, created a great environment for the guys to come back together, put aside the game for a little bit, create a good team chemistry, team bonding, get guys that have been injured like Josie back in the squad, and really focus on making a good push here in the playoffs. So sometimes being away helps the teams to get a little bit more focused. You're away from all the distractions that sometimes you have at home.
So they're battling some injuries right now. What do you expect to see out of them against Nashville? Because they haven't had a lot of offense lately, right? Only one game with multi goals in it. What do you expect to see out of them?
Well, I expect them to dictate the tempo of the game. Nashville is a new team. They don't have the experience that we have. So I'm hoping that we really dictate the tempo and the pace of the game. We have to stick it to them very early and really control the game. Hopefully we see Josie come on the field again. World of experience. Having a young kid like Io again creates a unique opportunity for us with speed up front. And we just got to get Pozuelo the ball and let him create and do the work that he does. He's had a great year, and I know he's excited to really take this team to the MLS Cup finals this year.
With Dwayne DeRosario on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. D-Ro, the Reds are the favorite tonight, so we're not going to sit here and pretend otherwise. But do you care at all that they have never played Nashville before, Nashville being an expansion team? Does it matter that there is no previous experience?
Not really, because sometimes it's a blessing in disguise. If they played Nashville and then say they thumped them or beat them, then going into the game, I think they would have a lot more confidence about the game. But because they haven't played, they're really going into the game extremely focused. They've seen, again, Nashville, their first game to qualify to get to where they are today against Miami. They handed it to Miami. They played a very impressive match. So I know TSC is going to be ready. They're going to be laser focused. And I think they're also a little bit hungry and can't wait to get back on the field and get playing. So I think it's going to be a great matchup. I do think we have the advantage. I do think our Reds should come out with this win if we dictate the tempo and the pace of the game and if we come out playing the game that we know how to play.
Dwayne, when you were a player, you saw some hard times here. You saw some better times here. I would imagine you always saw the potential of the Toronto FC franchise, the commitment of the fan base, especially the hardcore fans. How good has it been for you? How nice has it felt to see this franchise establish itself as one of the elite and destination MLS franchises over the last, certainly at least half a decade, maybe a little bit more now?
It's unbelievable feeling, growing up and playing all levels of my development here in Ontario and playing for the national team and seeing in 2007 my hometown
take the first leap of faith and join the MLS was a day I'll never forget. Was a day, I think that was a groundbreaking day. And such in such short time, and being a part of the club to host their first championship as a player, with the Nutrilite Cup, and then winning our first MLS Cup as an ambassador of the club. You know, you just, these are things that you just dream of as a kid, and the opportunities now and for local kids to take the game to the next level in their hometown. Whereas when we were growing up, we had to chase dreams outside of the country in Europe. And a lot of times we didn't know where we're ending up. And, you know, to have that opportunity here at home is just an amazing, rewarding feeling. And to know that I had some impact in that happening, it's only going to get bigger and better as we see with the 2026 World Cup also coming to Toronto. So I think it's only going up and up from here.
We were talking earlier in the show about players and doing community service and being involved with the city they're playing in. And I know, you know, you were always active. And the first time I met you a couple of years ago, we were at some charity event. I'm trying to think of the name right now. It can't come up, but I'm sure you do a lot of stuff like that, and you're still active in the community. What are some of the major projects you're involved in right now?
Well, me personally, I'm still doing my after-school program with my Dura Foundation. I just launched the new headphones. I'm coming out with a book next year. I just partnered with Kick Deck Soccer Series, which is a great tool, especially right now for kids staying at home. And, of course, Toronto FC, being the leaders in Canada, we just partnered with the MLSC Foundation and the Black Players for Change program with a program called Unite, which provide youth equitable access in and around Toronto. And we're the first club to create this partnership. Again, it's creating social change. It's creating equal opportunity. And I'm just happy and proud, again, that TFC is the first club to take that initiative and to put their best foot forward to say, hey, you know what, we stand for equality in sports. So great initiative, and I'm happy to be a part of the Unite program.
And Dwayne, we'll just after we let you go, read out the links to how people can get involved with Unite. And we know you're doing the rounds this morning, very busy. So we'll let you go. We'll thank you for your time. We'll be watching tonight and rooting on the Reds as we always do. Hope we can catch up in the not too distant future.
Sounds good. And again, people could catch you on the 5050.torontofc.ca. And always a pleasure, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
You bet. Dwayne DeRosario, the great Toronto FC player, had him twice from 09 to 11 and 2014. Good Canadian. And I do want to throw out the links and all of that, because this is a very important initiative that Toronto FC, the MLSE Foundation, and Black Players for Change are involved with. Again, as D-Row said, it's called Unite. You can support the new Unite fundraising initiative in two ways. You can participate now and throughout the MLS playoffs with the 50-50 match day jackpot. And this is if you're in anywhere in Ontario. Tickets can be purchased at 5050.torontofc.ca. 5050.torontofc.ca. So if you live in Ontario, you can purchase them anywhere in the province on that website, 5050.torontofc.ca. And by purchasing items from Toronto FC's exclusive Adidas Unite capsule collection, which is available at Real Sports Apparel. That's shop.realsports.ca/collections/unite-collection. So just go to realsports.ca and look up Unite. You'll be able to find it. The funds raised from the 50-50 jackpot and the retail collection will provide youth equitable access to sport in Toronto through MLSE Foundation and Black Players for Change. We'll read some more texts, and they are rolling in this morning. You are getting abused on Twitter, too.
Really? Come on.
Well, it's the Yacht Club stuff, man. You're bougie. We're looking for more name drops. We'll get you into studio. That's next.
It's Lead Off with Siggy and Scotty Mack. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
thought from Doug in Brantford. When Ziggy starts talking about all the places he's been, a little light background music would be appropriate, like Johnny Cash or Stompin' Tom's I've Been Everywhere.
Yeah, it's a good tune, and yes, I'm down for that. Throw it on.
James in Ottawa, I wonder if Ziggy is having lunch at the country club this afternoon.
The country club?
Well, you're just...
I don't have a golf membership.
You're
I
play
at the local
world,
munis. Sam. I play at the local munis, and every once in a while, I get a nice invite to a fancy course, like Wooden Sticks.
Yep, that was fun.
For Mr. Hugh Burrell.
Yeah, that was fun. Sorry.
You're trying to play down your bouginess, though. I think that's where we're at now. I think you want to you want to be a man of the people, but you...
He's low-key bougie?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I get the invites. I mean, would you, if I said to you, hey, Scotty, you want to come down to Miami for 5 days on my yacht in Miami?
Good point.
Is it a no or is it a yes?
Florida. We love Florida.
It's a strong yes.
Hang on. Is food included?
Starting to count the cake, eh?
Just there was food on the boat.
I want to be Ziggy for a month.
Bob in Burlington. So he's addressed this text to me. Scotty Mack, if you have a membership in a well-respected yacht club in Canada, in most yacht clubs, you don't have to own a boat. You usually get reciprocal privilege in other yacht clubs around the world. Practically speaking, this means you can dine at other clubs and very occasionally use their pools and facilities. I won't bore you with the names of interesting places my wife and I have been to hang out.
So hang on a sec. If you
That's
have
from Bob in Burlington.
If you have a membership to the Toronto Yacht Club, does that mean you could like go to Monaco and just kind of?
Why the hell not?
Imagine.
I mean, I wouldn't.
I've never been to a yacht club here in Canada. I wouldn't even know what one looks like. Literally, the one in Montego Bay, we watched. There was a football game on. We watched a football game. Somebody came up to me and my buddy said, "Hey, you guys want to play some cards?" And we're like, sure. We didn't have anything to do that night. We go in this back room and then Lennox Lewis is there. I took a picture with him with like the standard fist up. Do you know what I mean? Like the, you know, the photo you take with boxers.
Is he the most famous guy you've played poker with, Zig?
No, he's not actually.
Oh, okay.
I played with more. But he's a worse poker player than Hugh.
Yeah.
I've played with like all the...
I've played with a Hollywood actor. I'll tell that story one day. I've played poker with a Hollywood actor here in Toronto.
I've played with like a lot of the top poker players. Do they count? Like for me, they were bigger.
Sure.
Johnny Chan.
Yep.
What was Moneymaker's name? I don't remember his name, but his nickname
Chris
was
Moneymaker.
Moneymaker.
No, his last name was Moneymaker. He got the poker craze going in, I think, 2003. He won the World Series of Poker. Chris Moneymaker.
So I've been with him. I played with the guy with the glasses with the eyes on them.
Oh, Greg Raymer.
Greg Raymer. Yeah. I've been at a table with Phil Hellmuth before.
Scotty, you just sit there. Ziggy and I got this. So Greg Raymer, Phil Hellmuth.
Other big actors or athletes, I'm trying to think. There's been a couple. Just, yeah. Yeah. Nobody that comes to mind, but the former poker players, like the best in the world, you know, you remember them for sure.
You ever played?
Just playing. I've played a couple at the world, like the smaller events at the World Series. You know, you can do a buy-in for $50, $100, and play a satellite and play to get in.
Yeah.
So you know, you can do those, but I haven't played in the big one. The big one's like $10,000. That's like, not happening.
It's pocket change for you. Come on.
Yeah, right.
Guy with a membership at all the world's greatest yacht clubs. I'm not going in for $10,000 in a poker game. Come on.
So did you see Tom Brady pass? He caught his own pass. That counts as a completion last night in the, I think, third quarter.
Yeah, yeah, but it was also a penalty on the play because you can't pass the ball forward twice on the same play.
He did it so fast. I missed that. Like if they didn't have, replay, I wouldn't have caught that.
And he would know that rule too. So who the hell
was he
trying
to
get away with one?
But you got to remember, it was third down. They're already punting the ball back. Yeah. But I was thinking about it. How many players have actually caught their own pass? Brett Favre is one that comes to me. His first completion.
Aaron Rodgers has done it a couple of times.
Has he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mariota, didn't he do it a couple years ago in one of the playoff games? But I think he went in for a touchdown.
Yes.
Like he passed.
Yep.
He caught it himself and then went in, but they count as completions.
Yep. One of the few passes Tom Brady threw last night that didn't end up in the hands of a Rams defensive back. Oh.
I think the downturn has begun. I think so. We're all afraid to say it.
You guys were talking about this earlier in the show. To me, it goes week to week in the NFL. I mean, he could go out next game against the Chiefs, have a really good game, and they win convincingly, and now he's back to the top. But you're right.
Now we sit here and we're talking about the Rams potentially being one of the best teams in the NFC, and the Seahawks defense has question marks, and Green Bay lost in Indianapolis, blowing a lead. Don't know.
NFC's the conference nobody wants to take control of.
Right, which is weird because we went into the season thinking that there would be four or five, maybe even six elite teams.
Just watch my Washington football team, and it's marched to the playoffs beginning Thursday against
Thursday Dallas. Afternoon, a little U.S. Thanksgiving action. That's win number four for somebody, unless they play five quarters and tie.
It'll be a tie.
Playoffs?
I hope they tie. I hope that would be perfect. A tie.
That would be a great Ziggy Lock calling a tie. You'd get the odds for that one. Adnan Virk among our guests tomorrow morning. We're back at 6 o'clock for your Wednesday. Have a wonderful Tuesday and keep listening. Good show's next. You know the pita pit guy?
Yeah.